So this Maimah was said, let's just work it out, for Parshat Vayikra, which, like our Parshat Vayikra, is Parshat Zachor, where we are preparing for Purim. And so the Maimah focuses on a verse in the Torah, in the Sedra Vayikra, and then it discusses Purim as well. So it's... So let's just have a look at the verse, and it was said in 1965. So let's have a look at the verse. It's it's verse 13, basically the middle of the page. What's happening here? It's giving rules for the offerings. Vayikra begins. We're at the beginning of the book of Vayikra, Leviticus. And it's giving rules for the offerings. So this verse 13 is saying, "B'chol korban minchatcha, every offering that you bring as a gift to Hashem, b'melach timlach, you should have salt on it. There should be salt on the offering. V'lo tashbit melach, you should not cease to have." In other words, you must have salt, brit elokecha, which signifies the covenant of your God, me'al minchatecha, whenever you bring an offering. So so there should always be a salt, and here it's talking about a flour offering. Al kol korbancha takriv melech. And every offering, that means the animal offerings as well, you should have salt. So that whole concept of salt on the offerings. So the discourse, the Maimah, is going to take that concept and explore it a little bit more, and then discuss a comment by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, it's got a lot of... profound and fascinating concepts in it. Yom ba yom ba ya ya yom bo ya ya ra ya ra yom bo yom ba ya ya ba yom bo ha ya ra dam ba ya ya ra dam ba yom ba yom ya yere ram ba yam ba yom ya yere ram ba yam ba yom ha yere ram ba ya yere ram ba yo ya ya yam ba yam ha ha ya ya yam ba bam ho ya ya yo ya ya yo. So the Maimah begins, "V'lo tashvit melach brit elokecha." You should not cease to have. In other words, you must have salt of the covenant of your God with the offerings. Now it explains in the Book of Teachings by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, that's the founder of Chabad, "Shehamelech mamteket et habasar." The salt makes the meat more enjoyable, makes it sweet, makes it more tasty. The afsha melech atzmo ein botam. Even though salt in itself doesn't have a tasty, it's not like a tasty food. Afa pichein, nonetheless, hu poel atam babasa. It brings out the taste in the meat. Umamshech levaya, and he continues to explain. That's the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, who lived around 1850. You've got the same kind of quality in Torah. There's Torah which is like meat, and there's Torah which is like salt. And a little bit of the salt brings out the taste in the Torah which is like meat. And that is the inner dimension of Torah, the mystical dimension, Hasidic teachings. They are like the salt. Shehi ba'atzma nistachav nelma. Many aspects of the inner dimension, the Kabbalistic dimension, is very hidden. She'enu museget bevchina ta'am mamash. It's not always understood rationally. כמו שיש לנו השגה וטעם, contrasting with the way we understand rationally בהניגלות לנו, the revealed part of the Torah, which is revealed to us. Now, the thing is that the revealed Torah talks about very practical things, like, for example, the discussion we were having, you know, what happens in the Omer, what can you do, this part of the Omer, that part of the Omer. It's all a very practical thing, right down to earth. Hasidic teachings are talking about divine emanations and different Kabbalistic worlds. You know, that's, and it's very easy, you know, a person could say, look, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, this sphera, that sphera, this world, that world, you know, I understand when you tell me about, you know, when I can make a party. So there's the revealed Torah and the hidden Torah. But nonetheless, so the hidden Torah here, the Hasidic dimension, is being compared to salt. But nonetheless, the hidden dimension, the inner spiritual dimension, makes the meat tasty. And the meat means studying the revealed Torah, the laws, the Talmud. Kevon shal yedeze dafka. Now here he explains, what is it about the salt? What is it about the inner dimension of Torah which makes everything more meaningful? Since through this, dafka ba lidei yirat chet, he comes to a quality of fear of sin, not wanting to sin. V'chasher yirat Hashem yotzaho, and when the fear of sin is his treasure house, in other words, like they say nowadays, he owns it. Yes, it's part of his repertoire. You know, some people sometimes say, you know, oh, that's not me, you know, that's not my repertoire. And if a person can make awe of God their repertoire, Azaya Torah hi Toras Hashem, then the Torah is the Torah of God. Then the Torah he's studying is not just something that he is exploring himself, and it's something like very earthly. It's really the divine Torah, and if we can study Torah and appreciate it as God's Torah, as Torah coming from the infinite, then that's an incredible experience. So in order to do that, we need the inner dimension, the Hasidic dimension. And what happens with the Hasidic dimension? We get this quality of awe of God making us not want to do something wrong. You know, like mentioned before, like the idea of wearing tefillin. At the moment when a person's wearing tefillin, they're supposed to be that little bit more serious. It's the kind of sense of awe about the person at that moment. So this sense of awe is something which the Rebbe is saying here, we get through studying the inwardness of Torah, because the inwardness of Torah talks about God. The revealed Torah, to a great extent, although it's talking about God's laws, but it doesn't discuss God himself. It's all that there is a law that you should do this and you shouldn't do that, and exactly what is permitted and what is not, and what is not allowed. It's all talking about the practical dimension. Whereas Hasidic teaching, its Kabbalistic language is all talking about some aspect of God, revelation of God, attributes of God. It's all speaking about the divine. So it gets one into some kind of sense of relationship with the divine, and if one has a relationship with the divine, one's aware of the divine, then one becomes more concerned about what one does and what one doesn't do. So that's there in this discourse by the Tzemach Tzedek, by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. V'hine be'emshech ha'mayma. Now, as he continues this discourse, b'tor hakdama levaya ha'mala be'esek ha'torah niglin, as a kind of introduction to explain how important it is to study the revealed part of Torah, the laws, the Talmud, mevaya, he explains, Torah is the divine wisdom in the realm of emanation, the exalted realm of emanation, the highest of the four worlds. Sheba melubash o ein sof baruch hu mamash, in which is enclosed the radiance of the infinite. Va'al zeh mosev ha-tzemach tzedek, and when he's saying this, the tzemach tzedek adds, b'chatzah yigul, in brackets, in parenthesis, v'lechein nikcha ha-torah mashal ha-kadmoni, and that's why the Torah is called the proverb. You see, mashalim, a mashal is a proverb or a parable. The parable of the ancient one, of the original one. Shehi p'chinat chokhma ila, that is the upper wisdom. Shuhu kli l'o ensof, which is a vessel for the radiance of the infinite, baruch hu, may he be blessed. Shuhu kadmono shel olam, and God, the infinite, is the origin of the world. He is the one who, he is the original source of the world. Kamo shekatub mizeh bedrush Purim, as it says about this in a discourse concerning Purim. So in other words, he's explaining something about the Torah. That the Torah is the divine wisdom, which is in the world of emanation, which is incredible. But then it's also a mashal. Now, mashal means a parable or in modern language, what they call a model, like, you know, a mathematical model to explain something, or some kind of way of putting something across. So, so it might be a metaphor or a parable or a model in some form. So, and the Torah is called this model, it's called this parable, the parable of God, God's parable.
Is that like Mishle?
Yes, now Mishle is proverbs, but is also understood as being parables in this sense as well. And when it says about King Solomon in the Book of Kings that he spoke 3,000 parables, Mishalim, that's understood to be this kind of parable here. He's trying to communicate something very spiritual, very elevated. So he says a parable in order to explain it. See, the idea of the parable is that you have something very subtle and you can't, the people won't understand it straight if you just say it as it is. So you say, well, look, an image to help us explain it, and you give your parable. And so that's the parables of King Solomon. In fact, it says in Hasidic teachings that the fact that he spoke 3,000 parables, it's not they were parables on different things. He's trying to explain, like, central truths about existence. So he makes one parable, but that parable itself is very deep. So he gives another parable to explain the first one. And then he gives another parable to explain the second one. And with that way, he gets the 3,000 parable, but they're all one thing is a parable for the one before. It's interlocking parables. Now, and then there's this mention of the discourse about Purim. All right, well, that's topical because we're coming into Purim. So, line 22. Now we have to understand this. Dehine, because in Yana Mashal, a parable kolel dava v'hipuchu, it includes two opposites. The Michad Gisa, on the one hand, Hariu Kli La Nimshal, the parable enables us to understand whatever it's a parable for. The parable or the model, the diagram, it's putting over some piece of wisdom, and it's supposed to be communicating it. Va'animshal Melubashba, and whatever it is one's trying to communicate is hidden inside this model, this parable. But on the other hand, I kept my phone on because of my granddaughters. But on the other hand, no, that's not them. Hari hukli lenimshal. Sorry, le'edach yisa. Hari eina hamashal. The mashal, and see in Hebrew you got this wonderful thing, the parable and what is being expressed. The image and the model and what it's trying to say. So in Hebrew, that's the nimshal and the mashal. Now the two things are very separate. You've got what you're trying to communicate. You might be trying to communicate some very subtle idea. And in order to communicate that, you construct this parable. But the two things are actually different. A subtle idea and a parable are two different things. The Yesedah Mizuh, and more than that, over the page. Shuhu Mailim Ala Nimshal. The metaphor, the parable, conceals what it's trying to talk about. Now that's, you know, you could have a situation where you're telling someone a parable for something, and they can understand the parable. The only thing is, they can't understand what you're trying to explain. What the parable is really trying to say, that they can't get. Yeah, I understand. So it's the red train going this way and the green train going that way. but they can't understand what you're actually talking about. The profound philosophical truth which lies behind the red train and the green train, or whatever it might be. Uchelushon Torah Or. And as Torah Or, that's a book by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the grandfather of the Tzemach Tzedek. In fact, the Tzemach Tzedek himself edited that book. And he is referring to a particular discourse, a discourse relating to Purim. And in that discourse, it says, She'eino mimahut hanimshol klau. Whatever the parable is trying to communicate is something on a completely different level. So if we call it, the image or the model, and then we have some sort of higher reality which we're trying to communicate, well, oh, it doesn't look very different in color. Higher reality, but that higher reality is something which is way beyond the image and the model. But it can be that you hear this, you hear about the image, you hear about the parable, and from that you're able to understand the higher reality, whatever the higher reality is. Yeah, it might not be a spiritual thing, might be something in chemistry or something like that, but all right. So, Shema'alim ala nimsha. So the Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains that the problem is that the image, the model, hides the higher reality because we are confronted with this image. And that's what we, that's what we face, that's what we're thinking about. The higher reality slips our attention because we're focusing on the model. We're focusing on the image. V'chevan shebemayma b'likutei Torah. Since in the discourse, which is in the Likutei Torah of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, medubah, it's speaking about, odot ma'alat ha-Torah, it's speaking about the exalted nature of Torah, Shabba melubash oin sof baruch hu mamash. And in the Torah, the radiance of the infinite is itself is expressed. Eina muvan. So, what is he actually doing? We don't understand. Ma mosif bezeh. Why is he adding? Shahatorah nikreid mishal hakadmoni, that the Torah is called this metaphor of God, this divine metaphor. Hariyadu Rabbah, it's not telling us something positive. It's actually telling us something negative. Inyan mashal more al halem al nimshal. The idea of calling it a mashal is actually telling us that it's concealing the higher reality. Kadmono shel olam. So the higher reality is really God. Right? That's the higher reality that we want to communicate. And this image, this model, this parable is actually the Torah. And by telling us that the Torah is a parable in this way, are we really saying anything good, helpful about the Torah? Because if you just say it's a parable, well, a parable in relation to what it's trying to teach could well conceal instead of reveal. So we're dealing with that issue. Is it concealing or revealing?
Can be both.
Yes. That is a very good point. That is a very good point. And it, in a sense, it depends how you look at it. See, there's a way of understanding the laws of the Torah, the practical laws of the Torah. They're not exactly a mashal, but in the details of the laws, it all goes back to some kind of profound, exalted Kabbalistic truth. Even though we don't necessarily have the tools to work out which Kabbalistic truth it is, but it's there, hidden away somewhere. So in a sense, you know, is it hiding or is it revealing? Because when you study it, you're studying something which really is based, it's coming from God. But you don't understand it as godliness. You can't talk about it as godliness. You can be aware that it relates to God. But you don't necessarily, you can't explain where the divine quality is. You say, well, you know, these are rules about making a party at this time of year, that time of year. You know, it's like all in practical terms. Okay, line 10 on page Vav, page 6. Ve'yuvan, now this can be understood b'haktim by considering, first of all, habir ba'amur le'el, considering what we said on the previous page, shahamashal ma'alim al hanimshal. The parable hides the inner reality. Shebifchat mesiyam harezehelem gadol yoter. In a certain way, this is really a very big concealment. It's even bigger me'asher helem shebinyan achida than there is in the case of a riddle. Chida means a riddle. Now, riddle is an interesting thing, because when you ask a riddle, I mean, there are different kinds of riddles. And, you know, in English, a riddle is like a question. And what's the answer to the question? And can you guess the answer? In the Tanakh, in the Bible, riddles are, can you understand what this is? So, for example, Samson had a riddle. And the riddle is, well, I'll tell you what the riddle's about. There was a me'az from the strong. From the strong came out the sweet. So Samson killed, I think it was a leopard, with his bare hand. Very strong man. So he killed a leopard, and the leopard is dead. In the body of the leopard, there was a nest of bees. He came along later, like a few weeks later. There was a nest of bees. And from the bees' nest, you could get honey. So the leopard or lion, whatever it was, a strong animal, and that is now dead, and there's a nest, and in the nest is honey. So his riddle was, what does it mean, from the strong came forth sweet? So the Philistines were supposed to guess that riddle. So the thing is, the riddle in itself doesn't have any meaning. That's the kind of what's meant by a biblical riddle. English riddles are a little bit different. You know, why I can't remember any English riddle. Why did the chicken cross the road? You know, something like that. Is that a riddle? Is that called a riddle? Or is that just...
Is that a riddle?
What's a riddle in English? Life's a riddle.
Well, it could be a short story, it could be a sentence. It's not a defined thing, is it? Well, I'm sure the expert would probably understand us. Hey, Kira.
No. Why not?
Give a few examples.
I don't know the answer to that one.
All right, so that must be a little... Well, the point is, the point that the mimer is making, the discourse is saying, is that these biblical riddles, they don't really make any sense in themselves. You know, from the strong came sweet. So what, you know, it's not really telling you anything. Unless you work out that there was a lion or a leopard or something, and in the carcass there was a nest of bees, and the bees made honey. You know, so you understand, from the strong came sweet. But it doesn't make any sense without the answer. Whereas a parable makes sense without the answer. You could tell a parable to someone, trying to explain something to them, and they may not understand what you're trying to explain, but they do understand the parable. Yes, there was a red train going here and a green train going there. But, you know, so that bit they can understand. You know, so what happened to the train? They can understand the story about the train, even though they can't understand or they're not aware of the inner aspect. Now, see, where the part of what this discourse is about is what are we aware of? So let's see. So what the Rebbe is suggesting is that the concealment in a parable can be more than there is in a riddle. The kevansha, line 13, the kevansha chidakel shlatzma, because the riddle in itself, the loinyan shalav more achida, forgetting about whatever the riddle is supposed to be telling us about, right? The dead lion and the nest of bees. But just saying, from the strong came out sweetness, ein ba tochen sichli, it's got no rational contact. Or she afilu b'stira l'sechel, it might even contradict rationality. Kamo chidat shimshon, like the riddle of Samson, shemeaz yatza matok, the idea that from the strong came sweet, it doesn't make sense at all. If it's strong, you know, strong is one thing, sweet is something else. Harimizego from Muvan, and so from this we see Shachidam More al Inyan Mustuyam Shemitalemba. Because the riddle can't be understood at face value, it indicates clearly that it's referring to something or other which is hidden. You may not be able to work out what it is yet, but you know it's referring to something. Whereas a parable, Masha'en came by Mashal. With a parable, it's a different thing. Harigam lelo'anim shal, even if you don't know what it's talking about, and you're not even aware that it's talking about something, yesh bo eizet tochen, it's got some kind of content. Velechein yitachen, and therefore it might be, shebishmiat ha-mashal, that when the person hears the parable, lo tovsim klal, the person doesn't grasp at all sheyesh alav nimshal, that it's got some meaning behind it. Yeah, like the book Animal Farm. So Animal Farm, where everyone is equal, but the pigs are more equal than everyone else. So a person can read it, and it's a fascinating, imaginative story, and it's presented in a very nice way. They may not grasp that the normal conventional way of understanding what the story is about, it's about totalitarianism. They may not be aware of that. They don't know enough about the history of that period, Soviet Russia, things like that, to realize what this book is actually about. So they take it as a very interesting story in itself, but it's like a story. But they don't see necessarily, you know, if someone's teaching this at year 10 in school or something, that's the pupils are not necessarily going to grasp by themselves what the conventional reading of what it's about is. Ulahoya, and by the way, says the Rebbe, just making a comment, Shelefami Mavoa, sometimes it's explained, like in different places in Hasidic teachings, Shahamashal Ma'alimala Nimshal Pachot Me'asher Helim Achida. that the parable conceals what is within it, what it means, less than a riddle, right? So he's just said it conceals more. And the reason why it conceals more is because a person can understand the parable like Animal Farm and not realize that there's anything beyond that, that there's any deeper statement being made.
So it has some meaning to him, but not necessarily the full.
Yeah.
Whereas the riddle may have absolutely no real meaning.
Yeah.
Understand
well,
the words, but
so because the riddle doesn't have any real meaning, so therefore you know it must have some meaning. You know, I mean, isn't there a kind of what's red, white, and blue, and always in the snow, or something? You know, that's a riddle, isn't it? That kind of thing. You
what's
know,
black and white and red all over.
That's right. Yeah.
Newspaper.
Yeah, yeah. That's a typical homegrown English riddle. Yes, yeah. That, but I think they've gone out of fashion. I get the feeling that in the world of apps and Facebook, you know, somehow that kind of riddle is less. And that brings back, you know, childhood memory, you know. So you know that what's red and what's black and white and red all over must mean something. You know that it's not anything in itself. Whereas Animal Farm, which is a parable, a person might think, you know, well, you know, this writer wanted to write an imaginative story about animals, and it's very interesting. And they just don't see the next level of interpretation. So that's one way of seeing it, that the parable can conceal more than the riddle. So now the Rebbe is citing another part of Hasidic teaching. He's quoting, the footnote at the bottom indicates a discourse by the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, so which he said in 1918. So sometimes it's explained that the parable conceals the reality less than the riddle. But that's only after one knows shamashal yeshlo nimshal, that the parable has a meaning. You know, once you know that the parable has a meaning, then it might be quite easy to find out what the meaning is. So someone reads Animal Farm, they say, well, it's very interesting, you know, I never thought of animals like that. Don't be stupid, it's not just about animals, it's about something else. Well, what's it about? Can't you guess? You know, so then it might not be so difficult to work out what it's about. She'az hinei al yedei ha-mashal nakel yoter la'agi al ha-nimshal. If you have the parable and you know that it means something or other, it might be easier to work out what that is than the riddle, what's black and white and red all over, unless you understand that red is R-E-A-D and not R-E-D. It's just a great puzzle. What's black and white and red? You know, is it a pillar box? the word red is like a false trail. And so you could be thinking about all kinds of red things, when in fact it doesn't mean red, it means R-E-A-D, and it means something else. You know, so you may be foxed by the riddle, as indeed, you know, that's the idea with good riddles. You know, you tell the riddle and no one can work it out, and then you tell them the answer. Ah!
And then they kick you.
Well, it depends. Who's stronger than Ava Yocholiot? But it could be Gam Matzav. It could also be a situation. Shochoshvim shebamashal atzmo, that one realizes that in the parable, munach kol tochen ha'inyan, the person might think that in the parable. So the Rebbe's going back to his original thing in this part of the discourse. That you might think that in the parable is the whole content, mibli ladat sheyeshno gam nimshal, without realizing that it's got some deeper meaning. The person is stuck with Animal Farm as a thing about animals, and it's very interesting, and he gets another book about animals, and another, yeah, and it's, to him it's about animals and about pigs, you know, what clever animals pigs are, and that's it. ומצד זה נחשב המשל להלם גדול יותר מאשר חידה. And therefore, the parable could be considered an even greater concealment than the riddle. Now, I'm not quite sure how overt or whether you would say it's a subtext. You see, one can study Torah, the practicalities of the Torah, you know, the laws of the Torah, the Talmudic discussion of those laws, you know, and what it means counting the Omer, and what's the reason for, you know, not having weddings in the Omer, and when one doesn't have weddings. All this, one can study it this way, one can study it that way. One can study it with a sense that there's some deep spiritual dimension which is being expressed, and one may even have some, you know, some text which explains something about that spiritual dimension. Or it's presented in a very black and white and simple way, and you don't think any further than that. And so with all the laws of the Torah. Are the laws of the Torah saying something extra? Now, I was struck by a passage by Rabbi Shneur Zalman where he said, it's actually in Egeret HaKodesh in Tanya, the fourth part of Tanya, section 17, I happen to remember. He said, every single thing in the Torah, that, you know, in the halachic dimension of Torah, the halachic discussions in the Talmud, really is talking about some very, very profound spiritual thing. The only thing is we don't realize what it's talking about. But it's actually speaking about some very profound level. And so what we see as practicalities on a completely different dimension, those are very, very spiritual concepts, which somehow or other have some old structure, which we may not be aware of at all. And I wonder if there's a hint of that here, when the Rebbe says a person could be looking at the parable and not realize that it's got any other level, because it's possible to study Talmud or halachic dimension of Torah without realizing that there is a subtext. Now, the Inyan says Shaykh Levavor Bilukutei Torah Sham. Now, this relates to what it says in Likutei Torah there. Hachiluk Shebein Esek Torah Niglit. The difference between studying the revealed dimension of Torah, for example, Limud Hilchot HaTorah, like learning the Halacha. Sha'adam Alomed Masig V'Tofes. The person who's studying grasps Mahut ve'atziyut ha'chokhma shebalacha. He grasps, or she grasps, the very essence of the wisdom in that law. Mikevan shemedaberet be'inyanim gashmim. Because the law, as they study, it might be in the Talmud or the Code of Law, it's speaking about physical things. Shemahutan musag, the nature of which we fully grasp. Physical things, we're okay, we know about. Food, milk, meat, should they be mixed? No, they shouldn't be mixed. Parties, we can understand the Omer. These are practicalities, days of the month, dates, that's activities. Lelimud chokhmat ha-Kabbalah, compared with the wisdom of Kabbalah, studying that. And the Rebbe compares with the Kabbalah, studying the stories which are in the Torah or in the Talmud. So there are all kinds of stories. And these stories, Shehilchot HaTorah, Shemelubashim B'Seichel, the laws of the Torah which are expressed in intellect, Heim Dugmat Mushalim, they are like the parables. Ki Mitzad Itlabshut B'Seichel, because they're enclosed in the mind. It's possible to make the mistake. It's only got the external dimension. Gufe Torah, the basic aspects of Torah. As the Zohar puts it, Chashivuta de Gufa de Nishmata, the importance of the body and of the soul. Let's just see how he translates this here. sorry. To shame shall Adam yesh neshama beguf. This is little line 27 on the right hand side. Just as a person has a neshama and a body, v'chashibud haguf hi a neshama, and the importance of the body is the soul. If it didn't have a second dalad, it would make more sense. As the Zohar says, chashivuta degufa nishmata. It's got this extra dalad, I'm not sure how to read that. The importance of the body is the soul.
Where's the extra dalad? The
nishmata. You see, the importance of the body, of the soul. If you said the important, it's got the extra dalad in both places. So the importance, so somehow, I mean, the explanation at the side is reading it as if it says the importance of the body is the soul. So in other words, there's something inside. Hi, governor, and then the Zohar goes on in a similar way. A writer, Torah, itla gufa, it's got a body, and there are certain parts of Torah which are called gufei Torah, the body of the Torah, like the halachot, like the laws. And nishmata, but the soul of the Torah, di'i ikara d'chaylo, that is the essence of everything, a writer mamash. That's really what the Torah is, the spiritual inner dimension. Mashe'en ken ha'sipurim ba'agadot. Now, that's when we're talking about halacha, so it's possible to make that mistake. But when we talk about the stories and the Agadah, which might be comments on verses and explanations, which are there also in the Talmud, but it's a different section of each page. There's the halachic dimension and the agadic dimension, the story dimension. Kevan shelonit labshu b'horaot. Since that part of the Torah has not been enclosed in instructions, shezeh perish l'shon Torah. That's really what Torah means. Torah means hora'ah, means an instruction. The inyana Torah, the whole concept of the Torah, is giving us instructions. But since it's not enclosed in these instructions, ro'im b'zeh, one can realize, she'im ramzim al sodot ha-Torah, that these stories and these interpretations, they are actually hinting at secrets of Torah. Dugmat achida, like a riddle. But Yeshua, so what we're exploring at the moment is the whole nature of Torah, the riddle nature of Torah, which in a sense reveals more because it reveals less. So because it reveals less, you know that there's something there. Whereas the parable is so explicit and you can get lost in the parable. Sometimes when people are having a discussion, so someone, in order to explain their point, gives like a moshul, gives a parable. Then there's a whole argument about the parable. you know, like if someone was giving a parable, he's trying to explain something. So it says, for example, take Brexit. So then people start arguing about Brexit, you know, for Brexit, against Brexit, this, that, the other. They're lost in the parable. They say, look, I'm not trying to tell you about Brexit. I'm trying to tell you about some other subtle thing. But people get lost in the parable. So, the learning of Torah is, of course, learning of Torah, even if a person doesn't understand it in a very profound way. But the point that's being made here is that in the simple dimension, the practical dimension of learning, whatever tractate it is speaking about, you know, two people finding a talit and arguing about who gets, I found it, I want hold of it, and the other one says, no, it's mine, but at least half belongs to me. So that it's really talking about something else on a spiritual level.
How about chukim?
Well, the chuk as well. That's a very good example. You know, why can't we eat milk and meat together? So that one can be aware that there's some deep meaning in that, even though one doesn't actually understand what it is. Then one might become along some Kabbalistic treatise or something like that, where it says, you know, meat is the attribute of severity, and milk is the attribute of kindness, and you know, and they,
I'm asking, is that more of a riddle or more of a...
Oh, I see. That's very interesting. In a way, the chok, the statue, which isn't explained, is more accessible, that it must have a spiritual meaning. Whereas if it's just a law, don't steal. So, well, don't steal, you know, that's part of the social contract. Everyone knows that if you want a peaceful society, don't steal. Here goes, would you like some biscuits, something like that? So everyone knows if you want a peaceful society, so you have laws not to steal. So, and so they can miss the idea that in the Jewish laws not to steal, there is in fact hidden a deeper spiritual dimension. Whereas they will accept, well, if it's a law not to have milk and meat, a choik, a statue, there must be some, you know, it's pregnant with meaning somewhere, even if I don't know, you know, I haven't read the book yet, which explains the meaning. Yeah, but that's a very good point. So line 17 on page Zayin. V'yesh lomar, one can suggest, shezoi kavanat ha-tzemach tzedek v'mashe katav, that this is really what the Tzemach Tzedek meant when he wrote, v'lachein nikcha Torah mashal ha-kadmoni, therefore the Torah is called this mashal, this parable, of God, who's the essence of the world, Shuhu kli l'or in sof baruch hu, who is a vessel. Yeah, we're on page Zion, line 19, which is a vessel for the radiance of the infinite. Besli, shegam helam amashal, that even also line 20 now, that the concealment of the parable, tzrichin l'shanoto, we have to change it, v'lifol, and to achieve, sheyeh kli, that instead of it hiding the meaning inside, you see, you got the Torah, you got the parable, and then you got the higher reality, which is inside it. So the thing is, the parable, the image or model, can completely conceal this higher reality, which is inside. So I thought these two colors would be more visible. There's the higher reality, but it's hidden by the parable. So when we study the parable, which is the practicality of halakha, that we should realize that inside it, that it's really a vessel. Now, how do we do that? V'hainu, line 21, that's the case that the Tzemach Tzedek is making. Shal yedei limud pnimiut ha-Torah, through studying the inward dimension of Torah, Hasidic teachings, shenikret melach, which is called salt, and which, like salt on meat, makes the meat more tasty, and the meat is like the halacha, hinei gam ha-mashal, so the parable, nigle de Torah, the revealed part of the Torah, na'aseh kli, it becomes a vessel, lo'or ein sof baruch hu, to the radiance of the infinite. Now, it's very interesting saying it becomes a vessel. It is a vessel of for that immediately. It becomes a vessel for us. We start to see it as a vessel. It's a change in our perception. So by the fact that the person learns Hasidic teaching, he realizes, or she realizes, that in the halachic dimension of the Torah, there is an inner spiritual life force going beyond the actual practicalities. So whereas otherwise, one can be lost in the practicality and not think that there's any higher reality beyond. Line 24. Olohosif, now to add, Shebilikutei Torah Sham, now in Likutei Torah, that's the book of Rav Ishner Zalman's teachings, Bahat Chalat HaSeif, where it, at the beginning of that paragraph, Mudubah Odod Inyan Mesirat Nefesh, it speaks about self-sacrifice. Now, self-sacrifice, in fact, is very relevant to the whole Purim story, because the Purim story, in the Hasidic reading, the Chabad reading particularly, it's a story of the Jewish people in the time of Esther having, and Mordechai, having great dedication to Judaism, even though they weren't necessarily very religious, as the story begins. But when this decree came, and the decree came from Haman, why didn't Mordechai bow? Why didn't he want to bow to Haman? The Talmud discusses this. He started the whole problem. He wouldn't bow to Haman. So because he wouldn't bow to Haman, so Haman got very angry and wanted to find out that Mordechai was a Jew, so he wants to kill all the Jews. So would it be so wrong for Mordechai to bow to Haman? So it says in the Talmud, Haman thought he was a god. That's why he wanted everyone to bow to him. He made himself into an idol. Or another version is that he wore an idol on his chest. Either way, he wanted people to worship him or his idol. And when Mordechai wouldn't bow down to him, and the other Jews could see that this is an issue. And so therefore, that's in this conflict where Haman wants to kill all of them. So if the issue is whether to accept Haman as a god, it could have been, they could have said, the Jews could have made a delegation. Mr. Haman, look, we know that this wild person, Mordechai, you know, he won't bow to you, but we'll bow to you. Don't worry, we believe in you. Yes, you are our god. They could have accepted Haman's self-worshipping religion. So maybe they would have been spared. But they didn't do that. Even though they start off not necessarily very religious and quite assimilated into the Iranian lifestyle and taking part in the king's banquet and drinking non-kosher wine and eating non-kosher food. Nonetheless, when it came to the crunch, they are saying, we are Jews. And in fact, it's very interesting. The Megillah is the first place where the Jewish people are called Yehudim. Because up to then, in Tanakh, a Yehudi is a person from the kingdom of Judah, the southern kingdom, and Yisrael is the northern kingdom. So to say Ish Yehudi means a person from Yehuda, the tribe, not just the kingdom, but the tribe, from the tribe of Judah. So the Talmud says about Mordechai, it says he is Ish Yehudi, and it also says Ish Yamini. He's from the tribe of Benjamin, and he's from the but yet he's called a Yehudi. So they explain, why is he called Yehudi? Because anyone who denies idolatry is called Yehudi. So that applies to the Jewish people, or because all the Jewish people are called Yehudim. So the quality of Purim is Mesirat Nefesh, is self-sacrifice. Now, that quality of self-sacrifice, where does it come from? Line 26. Shehu me'atzmut ha'nefesh shelemayla me'aseichel. It comes from the essence of the soul, higher than intellect. It's a very, very profound thing that at some deep level within the person, they cannot act in this way. They cannot do that thing which is being asked of them. They would rather give up their life. They go beyond themselves. V'yesh lomar, and one can suggest, shahagahat ha-tzemach tzedek b'inin mashal ha-kadmoni, that this comment by the Tzemach Tzedek about the parable and the parable of the divine, shayechet relates, lo rak l'tevot shlifneya, doesn't only apply to the words before it, but that in the Torah, Shabbat Torah, Medubash Atzmut Oyin Sof Baruch Hu, that in the Torah is expressed, is enclosed the radiance of the infinite. Eila, Gam Lebedubah Barosh Hasif, also to what it says right at the beginning, Odot Inya of the paragraph, Inyan Mesirat Nefesh, the idea of self-sacrifice. Ki Inyan Mesirat Nefesh, because that self-sacrifice, which comes from the essence of the soul, which is higher than intellect, which is completely abnegated before the essence of the radiance of the infinite, which itself is much, much higher than wisdom, even the sphere of chokhmah, the attribute wisdom, That is an empowerment that we should be able to do the avodah of Meshal HaKadmoni, this parable. In other words, the Torah, la'asos minyan ha'mashal kli lekadmono shel olam, that from the parable, from the aspect of Torah, which we could forget, we could not realize that it's really expressing something very exalted beyond, so we should realize that in the Torah. I use the image of Animal Farm. So a person could read Animal Farm and think it's a nice story about animals without realizing that it's a parable about totalitarian regimes, right? So they're there on the level of the parable. Now, in the same way, Lahavdil, a person could study the halachic dimension of Torah or the Talmud and not realize that it's really talking about some exalted spiritual reality. Yeah, so they don't realize the hidden reality. They just realize it. They just learn it as something which is talking about practicalities here in this world. Now, Gimel. The Inyan Zemer Humas, now this is hinted at, but Tzion Shel HaTzemach Tzedek, in the comment that the Tzemach Tzedek makes, where he refers, Kamo Shekatuv Mezeh Bidrush Purim, as it says about this in a discourse about Purim. V'lo Kamo Shekatuv B'dibur Matchil, not as it actually says in the discourse, Chai Venish Lipsumi, there's a discourse which begins, a person has the duty to get drunk on Purim. It says in the Talmud, Rava said, a person has the duty to get drunk on Purim. Okay, how exactly we interpret that? And it says, what it says in the Talmud, you should get so drunk that you can't tell the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Now, cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, they are two, Baruch Mordechai, blessed is Mordechai, and Arur, and cursed is Haman. Right? Blessed is Mordechai, Baruch Mordechai, and Arur Haman. Funny thing is, they both mean something positive. Mordechai is good, he's blessed, and Haman is bad, and he's cursed. But the person gets so drunk, he can't tell the difference between them. So, does this mean people have to get really stoned out? how drunk they're supposed to get? So the Magen Avraham, in his comment on the Shulchan Aruch, this is quoted by Rabbi Yosef Karo in his Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Law. So the Magen Avraham says, wait a minute, these two phrases actually have the same numerical value. They have the same gematria. We've got 2 and 206 and 20 and 40 and 204 and 20 and 10. Okay, well, I'll tell you, this is 502 and this is 1, 206, 200, 5, 40, 50, 1995, 295. 295, that's right. 301, 501, 502. That's also 502. Okay, so they've got the same gematria. They've got the same numerical value. But a person, if he's a little bit tipsy, we had a discussion in the car how tipsy you'd have to be, can't necessarily work this out. can't work this out. So according to the Magen Avraham, that's enough to fulfill this rabbinic this requirement of Rava in the Talmud. The Rambam has a different piece of advice. The Rambam says, drink a little bit until you fall asleep. So you don't have to drink that much to feel drowsy and fall asleep. And when you're now, he doesn't spell it out, but like you can see that he means this. When you're asleep, you won't know the difference in Arahaman and Baruch Mordechai. So the Rambam gives like the most lenient thing in, as far as getting drunk on Purim. Of course, if you're driving, you've got a heter not to drink it. And many other reasons. Now, so now, let's just go to line 11. The Hine Ike Inyana Purim, I'm going to try and just read this in English. The main thing of Purim is this duty to get drunk so that you don't know. And the point being that what Purim is about is reaching that level of consciousness. It's a level of consciousness beyond the distinctions between negative and positive in the ordinary sense of the word. It's being able to rise to that higher level. Mm-hmm. And this is a mitzvah which is there the whole time on Purim, every moment. Because Adali Yoda, this idea of not knowing the difference in cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai, it says in the commentaries that it means he won't be able to work out the gematria, the numerical value, but the gematrias which are mentioned in the Torah, not just by chance, the gematria shows about some deep inner connection between these things. And he quotes about the existence of the world and the way that certain things, that from the 10 statements with which the world came into being, and then you have from then something with the same gematria, so there's a connection between them. So what actually is, this is on page 10, what actually is the connection between Oro Haman and Baruch Mordechai, between Cursed Haman and Blessed Mordechai, which sound like opposite things? The explanation is the life force in everything is the divine purpose for which it's created. Since the intention in creating Oro Haman, Cursed Haman, is for the sake of Haman being transformed, and that means that through the Avodah of the Jewish people, it should be changed instead of Cursed is Haman into Blessed is Mordechai. And that really is the purpose in all bad things. The reason why something is bad and something bad is attractive and attracts us and tries to tempt us is in order it should be changed into something positive, to something radiant. So it means that the divine life force in Oro Haman, in fact, is Baruch Mordechai. So within the negative is the positive hidden away. And that's what it means, till you don't know the difference between them, that we have to change the cursed is Haman into the blessed is Mordechai, till you won't see any distinction between them. So in other words, you reach that level where your not knowing means that you are knowing in a very profound way. You're seeing the essential reality which there is in all existence. Until there was, and since also the Oro Haman, the cursed is Haman, becomes the blessed is Mordechai, and in a deeper way, when you see that concept of cursed is Haman, in other words, a negative thing, the person immediately sees, and in fact only sees, the intention within it, the Baruch Mordechai, the blessed is Mordechai. And the discourse continues to, and it discusses the whole idea of tshuva, the way that a person who has sinned, and then repents, the person ultimately, when they repent with love, they're able to transform a deliberate sin, not just into an accidental sin, but into a positive action, as if it was something positive. And that makes the repentant really higher than the person who's never sinned. Because the person who's never sinned is only dealing with the positive aspect of existence. Whereas the person who has sinned has actually dealt and come in contact with and been involved with negative aspects of existence, which they're now able to elevate. And through elevating them, they're really achieving the purpose of existence, which is to take the whole of all the negativity that there is and reveal the radiance which is within it to make this world a dwelling for the divine.
What was the connection between the whole bit with parables and riddles and this later bit?
Well, you see, the parable is really the arahama. The parable is the external, obvious reality, and what we have to try to do is see the inner meaning. And that's really all the way through life. So in the case of Haman and the Purim story, it was a very challenging situation. It was like a very negative situation. How are you going to relate to this negative situation? Oh, you've got to try and see the inwardness. But it could be every aspect of life, and even in Torah. Because what's happening in Torah and in study of Torah is the inner workings of what's happening at every aspect of life. So from this issue, within the Torah, do we take only the parable or do we reach the inner reality? So that extends downwards till you get a situation of a crisis like this Purim story, and you've got Haman as a terrible figure, a really Hitler type figure, and then you've got the whole situation and how are we going to relate to that situation, with the need or the goal that we should be able to see beyond the appearances of the situation and reach God, the higher reality within. Okay. So it starts off in Torah, that process.
And in the later story, were there any aspects of it that were like a riddle? Or was that just...
Ah, now that's very interesting, because there was the comparison of the parable to the riddle. Interesting, I'm not sure. It's a very interesting question. I mean, it could be that sometimes, well, maybe this would be a way of understanding it, and it's a very profound point. The parable is when it's an understandable situation. The riddle is when it's a meaningless situation. So it's like so horrific. For example, you know, when the Jews were herded into ghettos. So it's recorded, you know, people were asking, what does it mean? You know, what is happening? That's everything was being turned upside down, inside out. That's they couldn't, you know, and for the Jews of Germany, you know, the same chap who is my friend, we used to play chess together, you know, suddenly he's the Nazi coming into my home, you know, smashing everything. There were a lot of people committed suicide simply because they could not grasp this negative transformation. You know, that's like a riddle. That's a parable is when life is like normal and comfortable and everything is all right. And because it's so normal and comfortable, people forget the goals of life, the inner dimension.
Okay. Thank you.